Former Secret Service agent Evie Pumpwaras knows fear intimately. When the first plane hit the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001, she was working at the Secret Service's New York field office in Tower 7. Instead of running away, she ran toward the danger, helping survivors escape before both towers collapsed around her. This defining moment taught her that when the world seems to be ending, helping others becomes the antidote to fear, the first step toward becoming bulletproof. Becoming bulletproof has resonated with readers worldwide, including celebrities like Oprah Winfrey and Tim Ferriss, who have praised its practical wisdom. The book has become required reading in many law enforcement and security training programs, with its unique blend of high-stakes stories and actionable advice. Drawing from her experiences protecting presidents, interrogating suspects, and surviving terrorism, Pumpwaras offers a masterclass in mental fortitude that anyone can apply to everyday challenges. Her message is clear. True strength isn't about eliminating fear, but mastering it through preparation, mindset, and courage. Fear is universal, but our ability to conquer it depends entirely on mental attitude. We're born with only two innate fears, falling and loud sounds. All other fears are learned from parents, culture, news, and personal experiences. Each generation develops its own societal fears: communism in the 1950s, assassinations in the 1960s, oil crises in the 1970s, foreign threats in the 1980s, Y2K in the 1990s, and terrorism after 2000. Today, we fixate on statistically rare dangers like mass shootings, one in 614 million odds, while ignoring more probable threats like car accidents, one in 102 chance annually. Media sensationalism makes uncommon events seem frequent, overriding our ability to logically assess actual risk. When threatened, our bodies activate the fight, flight, or freeze response even before we're consciously aware of danger. The sympathetic nervous system floods our body with norepinephrine and adrenaline, causing sweaty hands, faster heartbeat, muscle tension, dilated pupils, and increased breathing, everything needed to face immediate danger. Meanwhile, the parasympathetic system helps calm us down afterward. Understanding your typical F3 pattern is crucial for managing threatening situations. No single response is universally correct. Each can be helpful or harmful depending on circumstances. By recognizing your instinctive reaction, you can predict your behavior and develop strategies to control it when necessary. Pumpwaras' own relationship with fear was shaped by her Greek immigrant parents, who kept her constantly indoors except for school after experiencing violence firsthand in 1980s New York City. Their cautionary words, "Watch out, be careful, hurry inside," taught her to fear everything and everyone. This overprotection cost her opportunities, including attending Brooklyn Tech High School after being accepted because her mother refused, saying Brooklyn was too dangerous. The more she was told to be afraid, the more she resented it and became determined not to let fear dictate her life. At 23, she joined the NYPD Academy, her parents' worst nightmare. They were so disappointed they stopped speaking to her, but their silence only strengthened her determination to defy fear rather than bow to it. Mental armor acts as a protective psychological barrier that insulates against toxic people and situations. Like bubble wrap around China, this shield allows you to put yourself out there without fear of criticism or rejection, making you bolder and braver. Holocaust survivor research by Maurice Vanderpoel found that survivors who led normal lives after concentration camps had developed a plastic shield, mental sovereignty that protected their inner psychological space. To build mental armor, introduce micro-stressors into your life through a process called hormesis. Like vaccines that introduce small amounts of virus to build immunity, or weightlifting that creates micro-tears in muscles to make them stronger, our minds grow stronger through incremental exposure to stressors. Secret Service training deliberately exposed agents to increasing stress levels so they could function under extreme cognitive loads, running, shooting, evacuating burning buildings, and protecting principals simultaneously. The process involves five steps: expose yourself to small stressors, experience and observe your fear response, Adjust your approach based on what you learn, overcome through incremental improvement, and repeat consistently. Like increasing your bench press from 25 to 150 pounds through patient practice, mental fortitude grows incrementally. Fear, like unwanted weeds in a garden, must be addressed while still small. Palmporous shares her personal fear of cold temperatures, developed through traumatic experiences as a Secret Service agent standing post in extreme weather conditions. During George W. Bush's 2005 inauguration, she endured 12 hours in freezing temperatures wearing only professional attire, developing frostbite that turned her feet blue. Despite similar experiences in Wyoming, Minnesota, and at the White House, she refuses to let this fear control her life. She conditions herself by taking cold showers, running in adverse weather, and even surfing the Atlantic in January. Just as the Secret Service avoids putting the president in dangerous hot zones, we should identify and avoid environments and relationships that undermine our mental well-being. Take inventory of your social circles. Do certain people diminish your self-worth or leave you feeling depressed rather than energized? When toxic people can't be avoided completely, physically removing yourself from harmful situations prevents further damage, a concept called getting off the X in firearms training. Society misperceives walking away from conflict as weakness, conditioning us to strike back when disrespected. However, immediately confronting every aggressor often stems more from protecting pride than true strength. Walking away demonstrates strategic strength, checking your superficial ego and being smarter than your adversary. True inner strength lies in selectively choosing which battles to fight and when to engage. Mental resilience serves three crucial purposes: keeping you emotionally composed during crisis, helping you problem solve using logic and reason, and enabling quick recovery from mental hardship. It's not an innate trait, but a skill that can be developed through practice and proper strategies. Admiral Jim Stockdale, who survived 7 years of torture as a Vietnam POW, noted that optimists died of broken hearts in captivity. While optimism has value, facing reality matters more. When difficulties arise, replace "I can't believe this is happening to me" with "This is happening. This is my reality. So now what?" Accepting your situation is the first step to overcoming it. Sometimes we focus on the wrong problem, like going to a chiropractor for ankle pain, only to discover misaligned hips. When solutions repeatedly fail, reassess whether you're addressing the right issue. When stuck on a problem, seek perspective from others, particularly those with emotional distance from the situation who can offer unbiased insights. Research shows humans have limited mental bandwidth for problem solving. Our executive function helps us think creatively, stay focused, and handle challenges. When taxed by seemingly insurmountable problems, we impair our ability to handle future issues. That's why it's wiser to adopt a solution mindset rather than obsessing over problems. Before moving towards solutions, allow yourself time to process your emotions. Give yourself a designated period to gripe or grieve, from 1 hour to a week depending on the emotional fallout, then commit to moving on. Without an expiration date, you risk turning temporary emotional responses into habits. Once you've processed your emotions, accept your new reality and adopt the mindset that this is your problem to solve. Solutions require innovation and creativity, stepping outside your mental confines to view the situation from a bird's-eye perspective. After 9/11, Pomperous volunteered at Ground Zero, working 12-hour shifts at the Secret Service Command Post. While grieving the tragedy, she found purpose in helping others and supporting those who had lost more than she had. This aligns with Viktor Frankl's observations from Auschwitz, detailed in Man's Search for Meaning, where he concluded that finding meaning in suffering enables resilience. Research confirms that helping others releases oxytocin and reduces depression. Consider the difference between "Look what I became" and "Look what became of me." The first shows ownership and active participation in one's life, a powerful mental attitude. The second reveals passivity, accepting whatever happens, a powerless mental attitude. With a powerless attitude, you blame external forces for your difficulties, putting yourself at others' mercy. With a powerful attitude, you take ownership of your situation and recognize your ability to change its course. Solutions require innovation and creativity, stepping outside your mental confines to view the situation from a bird's-eye perspective. After 9/11, Pomperous volunteered at Ground Zero, working 12-hour shifts at the Secret Service Command Post. While grieving the tragedy, she found purpose in helping others and supporting those who had lost more than she had. This aligns with Viktor Frankl's observations from Auschwitz, detailed in Man's Search for Meaning, where he concluded that finding meaning in suffering enables resilience. Research confirms that helping others releases oxytocin and reduces depression. Consider the difference between "look what I became" and "look what became of me." The first shows ownership and active participation in one's life, a powerful mental attitude. The second reveals passivity, accepting whatever happens, a powerless mental attitude. With a powerless attitude, you blame external forces for your difficulties, putting yourself at others' mercy. With a powerful attitude, you take ownership of your situation and recognize your ability to change its course. Solutions require innovation and creativity, stepping outside your mental confines to view the situation from a bird's-eye perspective. Protection requires more than mental grit. It demands proactively anticipating what could go wrong before it happens. Not to dwell in fear, but to understand reality and prepare accordingly. In the Secret Service, 90% of protection is prevention, with agents constantly planning for the jackal, the unknown threat that could strike at any moment. The same principle applies to personal safety. Being proactive rather than reactive puts you at a significant advantage when facing potential dangers. The Presidential Protective Division consists of two teams: the Advance Team, which creates multiple layers of security preparations ahead of time, and the Shift Team, which forms the innermost protective layer designed to react defensively if threats penetrate the advance safeguards. This proactive approach is essential for personal safety too, requiring you to create your own advance plans for places you frequently visit. Safe houses are places you can go to be secure in emergencies. As a Secret Service agent, Pomporus always identified key locations near protectees: Trauma One hospitals, equipped to handle serious injuries, police departments, with power generators and protection, firehouses, structurally sound with trained emergency responders, and relocation sites, designated meeting points. Know these locations in proximity to your home, work, and school, and commit their routes to memory so you can respond intuitively during crisis. During emergencies, you cannot rely on navigation apps or devices. Cell service often fails during disasters, as happened on 9/11. Visit your safe houses in advance and commit their locations to memory, especially in relation to places you frequent most. This preparation allows you to respond intuitively during crises when cognitive functions are compromised by stress, saving precious time when seconds count. Large events like stadium concerts are considered hard targets, locations vulnerable to attacks due to the three P's: people, large crowds; place, densely packed population in one location; and press, media coverage that could broadcast an attack. While these places typically have additional security, recognizing your increased vulnerability in such environments is essential. In contrast, soft targets like schools, restaurants, or movie theaters traditionally pose lower risk, but with fewer security measures, they've increasingly become targets for attacks and shootings. Don't shield children from safety discussions. Educate them instead. Teach them about safe houses, routes, and emergency protocols. Have them memorize important phone numbers and practice escape routes. Most importantly, teach children to fight back. According to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, 70% of kids escaped abduction attempts between 2000 to 2016 by fighting back. Predators seek easy, compliant targets, so empower children to yell, scream, kick, or bite to defend themselves. While the advance team creates proactive security layers, the shift represents the reactive force, agents trained to respond quickly and effectively to threats. Unlike many people who avoid responsibility during emergencies, like those who refuse exit row seats on planes, you should prepare yourself to be the most capable person in a crisis. Don't surrender your personal safety to strangers who may not be better qualified. Assessing your environment is crucial for self-protection. The shift team calls this situational awareness, recognizing dangerous behavior while remaining fully present in your surroundings. Spend the first 5 minutes in any location assessing your environment and creating a mental situation report. This simple habit lets you relax and enjoy yourself while remaining prepared. Predators look for easy prey, people lost in their own worlds or distracted by smartphones. Becoming bulletproof means becoming present, more important than learning self-defense techniques, because if you don't see danger coming, fighting skills won't matter. In law enforcement, cover shields you from bullets or weapons, something strong like a tree trunk, heavy furniture, or a mailbox. Concealment, by contrast, hides you completely but won't stop bullets. The ideal is finding something providing both cover and concealment, like a brick wall. But when immediate action is needed, prioritize cover first, then concealment. Most buildings have at least two ways in and out, but we typically only notice the main entrance. Secondary exits are often in back rooms, kitchens, or loading docks. Finding these alternative exits should be your first priority when entering any location. During emergencies, most people instinctively flee toward the entrance they use to enter, creating dangerous bottlenecks. Always look for exits that may not be obvious, and remember that going against traffic is often safer. In restaurants, avoid sitting with your back exposed. Choose seats against walls where you can see everything in front of you. In movie theaters and concerts, skip the center seats with the best views and instead choose seats near secondary exits and elevated positions that offer better sight lines. Count how many people stand between you and your exit, as they could become obstacles during an emergency evacuation. Upon arrival at any location, take 5 minutes to 1. Assess by identifying two egress points on opposite sides. 2. Plan evacuation routes considering speed and obstacles. 3. Identify hard areas for protection if evacuation isn't possible. 4. Locate cover and concealment options. And 5. Identify potential improvised weapons nearby. Silverware, hot coffee, chairs, anything you could throw, smash, or stab with if necessary. Our instincts exist to protect us from harm. Throughout her law enforcement career, Pumporus's instincts repeatedly kept her safe. When something feels off during her late-night runs, she immediately turns around and goes home. Despite her self-defense training, she avoids testing her skills unnecessarily. Our unconscious mind detects subtle warning signals before our conscious mind processes them. Politeness should never override self-protection. Start paying attention to your internal guidance, who you're drawn to or repelled by, and believe yourself. Embrace your sixth sense and listen to what it tells you. During the G20 summit in Mexico, Pampuris was securing a private meeting between President Obama and China's president when a high-ranking Chinese general tried forcing his way past her. Despite her polite but firm refusals, he grabbed her collar and shoved her through the door. She immediately retaliated, grabbing his suit and pushing him back into the crowd of delegates. He attacked again with reinforcements, choking her against a wall before her colleagues joined the melee. Mexican security intervened, and afterward, when an interpreter scolded her for manhandling their general, she responded that picking fights with women wasn't very general-like behavior. Her effectiveness in confrontations comes not from physical strength, but mental conviction. She believes in her purpose and responsibilities, leaving no room for debate about her authority. While she's not an advocate for violence and tries to avoid conflict, sometimes trouble finds us despite our best efforts. When someone crosses the line, as the general did, her response is calculated and fierce. In those rare moments when you must stand your ground, do so with absolute commitment. Without conviction in what you're doing and why, you'll lose before the first punch is thrown. Creating a bulletproof mindset requires embracing conflict when necessary and becoming a counter-predator rather than a victim. Bullies and predators seek to exploit vulnerabilities, whether they're street thugs, manipulative family members, or abusive partners. Their secret is targeting those perceived as weak who won't fight back. Contrary to perception, predators aren't confident. They're often deeply insecure, which is why they target the vulnerable. Research shows criminals specifically select victims by their body language, slumped walk, passive behavior, and lack of awareness. Present yourself with vigilance and assurance, shoulders back, head up, making eye contact, and predators will seek easier targets. Forget fancy self-defense moves from TV shows. They're useless in real confrontations. When assaulted, fine motor skills disappear along with clear thinking. Unless you've practiced specific techniques repeatedly, you won't remember them under stress. Instead, focus on simple, violent strikes to vulnerable areas, groin, shin, throat, eyes, using powerful elbows and knees to create enough distraction to escape. The goal isn't engaging in prolonged combat, but striking effectively and running. Despite her training and confidence in her fighting abilities, sparring with her much larger husband delivered a humbling reality check. Though she knew he was strong, she drastically overestimated her ability to effectively fight someone of his size and skill. When he pinned her with his full weight during jiu-jitsu practice, she couldn't move and felt genuine fear as she realized the vast difference in their physical power. This experience taught her an essential lesson. There's a massive gap between thinking you're strong and testing that strength against a larger opponent. Everyone should discover their physical limitations through actual training. Finding where your weaknesses lie allows you to improve strategically. Learning to detect deception requires understanding that the interviewer, not the machine, is the true polygraph. Body language reveals far more than words alone. When someone's physical signals contradict their verbal message, even subtly, it signals the need for closer attention. About 65% of communication is nonverbal, providing a wealth of information people unknowingly reveal about themselves. No two people express themselves identically through body language. Some look away when lying, others maintain direct eye contact. Before interpreting someone's signals, you must understand their normal behaviors, their baseline. One-size-fits-all formulas for reading people don't work because we're all products of unique combinations of genetics, experiences, upbringing, and education. What makes reading people possible is that most are poor liars. Lying requires simultaneously tracking a false narrative, delivering it convincingly, and controlling physical signals while managing stress responses. To identify someone's stress signals, first observe them when relaxed. Begin conversations with neutral topics, the restaurant you're in, their shoes, their children, to establish how they naturally sit, stand, speak, and gesture when comfortable. This baseline becomes your reference point for detecting meaningful changes in their behavior. Look for multiple behavioral changes rather than single anomalies. When someone suddenly fidgets or covers their mouth when answering a question, it signals something has changed, perhaps anxiety, nervousness, or deception. However, single behaviors can be misleading. The body wants to tell the truth, often bleeding information despite conscious efforts to control it. Contrary to popular belief, normal eye contact typically occurs only about 60% of the time during conversation. Breaking eye contact while speaking is natural, not necessarily deceptive. The key is establishing each person's normal pattern and noticing changes. Never correct someone's natural patterns by demanding they look you in the eye. This only teaches them to mask their tells, making deception harder to detect. The mouth holds much of our tension and often betrays us regardless of our words. When angry or stressed, we clench our jaw or grind teeth. Nervousness manifests as lip biting, mouth tightening, or twisting lips to one side. Dry mouth, causing exaggerated swallowing, is another common sign of anxiety. Frequent sighs or yawns can indicate heightened stress. Yawning appears to help cool down our bodies when stress causes internal temperature to rise. A genuine smile transforms the entire face. The Duchenne smile engages both the zygomatic major muscles, raising mouth corners, and orbicularis oculi muscles, raising cheeks, typically lasting between 0.5 to 4 seconds. Fake smiles either flash quickly or remain unnaturally fixed, affecting only the lower face while eyes and cheeks remain neutral. Influence is about strategically using words to affect someone's mindset while maintaining authenticity. As Pumporus's NYPD instructor taught her, your words are your most powerful weapon. Her colleague Lee called this verbal economics, understanding that words, like currency, have value that can be invested wisely or wasted. Most people speak carelessly, but effective influence requires seeing through your listener's eyes and adapting your communication to their perspective. Every word should serve a purpose, moving conversations in deliberate directions. Influence isn't about permanently changing someone's character or belief system. It's about shifting their mindset regarding specific situations. Getting kids to do homework, short-term outcome, differs fundamentally from trying to change their values about education, long-term change. When interrogating terrorists, Pumporus never wasted energy trying to make them love America. She focused on obtaining specific intelligence by understanding their perspective. People only truly change because they want them to, not because you want them to. When you truly want to influence others, giving them your complete attention is paramount. President Clinton exemplified masterful communication by making everyone feel worthy of his undivided attention. Despite running late to important events, he would take time to speak with ordinary people, asking their names, where they were from, and following up with genuine curiosity. His power came not just from talking to people, but truly listening to them. One simple yet powerful influence technique is turning off your phone, visibly, at the start of any interaction. Keeping your phone out signals that something else might be more important than the person you're with. Our brains don't multitask well. When attention shifts, we miss crucial behavioral cues that could indicate how a conversation is going. Our names are directly linked to our personal identity, making them the sweetest, most important sound to us. When we hear our name, regions in our brain responsible for self-judgment and personal qualities activate, creating positive feelings. President Clinton masterfully used this technique, repeating people's names throughout conversations. Addressing people's shortcomings in private rather than publicly makes a tremendous difference in changing behavior and gaining compliance. People deserve the dignity of privacy regardless of what they've done, and this approach also provides tactical advantage. People in private settings are more relaxed, open, and truthful, while those who feel exposed will edit their responses or shut down completely. During her Secret Service career, Pumporus witnessed presidents and first ladies endure relentless criticism while maintaining composure and dignity. Like Aristotle's 12 virtues and the 5 points of the Secret Service star, justice, duty, courage, honesty, loyalty, these leaders demonstrated exceptional character under pressure. President Clinton was the rock star among presidents she protected. People loved him, and he genuinely loved people. His curiosity about others meant he never missed an opportunity to stop and talk, causing security headaches but creating memorable moments for citizens. During a teachers' conference at the New York Hilton, her carefully planned security route through the kitchen was disrupted when Clinton spotted kitchen staff she'd hidden in a storage closet. Despite her efforts to keep them out of sight, he insisted on meeting each worker, asking their names, origins, and roles, not as rushed pleasantries, but with genuine interest. Hillary Clinton demonstrated extraordinary fortitude when she marched in New York City's Gay Pride Parade in the early 2000s, the only Secret Service protectee Pumporus had known to do so. Despite security concerns about protecting her amid tens of thousands of unpredictable spectators, she was determined to show support for a community that needed it long before such appearances become politically popular. Throughout her career, from First Lady to Senator to Secretary of State to presidential candidate, Pumporus never saw anyone endure more public mistreatment yet remain resilient. During the 2004 Summer Olympics in Athens, Pumporus witnessed 41, George H.W. Bush, demonstrate profound gratitude at an exclusive yacht party. As the gathering wound down, President Bush didn't just mingle with celebrities and officials. He deliberately walked through the yacht to personally thank every staff member who made the evening possible. From crewmen to waitstaff, bosun to bartenders, he stopped to express appreciation to each person, including a maid organizing towels who seemed surprised by his acknowledgement. At Prairie Chapel Ranch near Waco, Texas, George W. Bush's Western White House, Pumporus witnessed the president's unwavering authenticity. Despite the setting changing from the 1,600-acre property with its oak trees and bike trails to the formal White House, Bush remained consistently himself, an outdoor enthusiast whose Secret Service codename, Trailblazer, suited him perfectly. He'd challenge agents to grueling mountain bike rides that left even former college athletes struggling to keep pace. During a Memorial Day weekend at Walker's Point in Kennebunkport, Maine, Pumporas witnessed Laura Bush's extraordinary grace firsthand. While attempting a simple speed walk with her daughter Barbara, the First Lady was repeatedly approached by locals requesting photos and conversation. Despite what should have been a private mother-daughter moment, Mrs. Bush, whose Secret Service codename Tranquility perfectly captured her essence, never showed a hint of irritation. She greeted each person with genuine warmth, took countless photos, and listened patiently to excited monologues. While escorting President Obama through the White House during the congressional picnic, Pumporas witnessed a remarkable display of magnanimity. A congressman approached with his family, greeting the president with excessive enthusiasm. Despite his busy schedule, Obama warmly engaged with the man and his children, taking photos and chatting amiably. Only after they entered the elevator did the president reveal that this same congressman had been publicly berating him since his first day in office. Despite facing one of his fiercest critics with every reason to avoid him, President Obama chose to extend nothing but graciousness. In her conclusion, Pumporas reflects on the lessons learned throughout her life and career. She shares a powerful childhood memory of visiting the Agios Minas Monastery in Greece with her father, where thousands of Greeks were massacred in 1822, a lesson about facing harsh realities and understanding the importance of fighting back. She confronts her current fear of watching her father die from pancreatic cancer, acknowledging that even someone bulletproof experiences deep fear. Yet she recognizes that fear and love are often two sides of the same coin, connecting us in our shared humanity. True bulletproof resilience means finding strength to bear the unbearable and making choices in the face of terrible circumstances. Her ultimate message? You are the hero you've been waiting for. You are the hero the world has been waiting for.